Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servidio, and I am your host. For any new listeners, I am a licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist. I am also a certified personal trainer and aerobics instructor. My show consists of questions from you, the listeners, and I will be providing educational tools and skills to address these questions. Once again, this does not take the place of your own individual therapy or medication management, and any of the exercises or fitness advice that is provided on this show should always be checked and cleared by your own medical doctor first. So let's get started with our first question. Dear Insight into Healing, I am never satisfied with my weight. I go up about 10 to 15 pounds every few months. I'm feeling very down about myself. What do you recommend for me as a therapist and as a fitness professional? Well, let's start as a therapist. When you say your weight is going up 10 to 15 pounds every few months, I'm wondering, is this a cycle or a pattern that's been going on for a few years, or is this just something that's been going on for the last few months? Because I think also by looking at your mood and your motivation and your energy levels can also say a lot about what's going on. Also, as a therapist, I was wondering, are you feeling sad? Are you feeling any anxiety? Is there a lack of motivation? Do you feel that you're isolating yourself? Or is this weight going up and down sort of separate from your mood? Because sometimes when we're sad about something, or we're feeling anxious or maybe angry about something, it can also affect our weight by affecting our habits, our eating habits, our exercising habits, the way we take care of ourselves. So first, I would also take a personal inventory of how you're feeling. Maybe in the morning when you wake up, say, you know, am I feeling sad? Am I feeling happy? Do you wake up feeling energized, or is there some sort of looming feeling of sadness or isolation or not really wanting to get up and start the day? Also, I would say during the middle of the day, check your energy level. Check how your mood is. How are you feeling? And also before you go to sleep. Also, as a therapist, I would say, what is going on in your life? Is there any major decisions that are coming up that you're feeling concerned about? Any big life events coming up? Sometimes if there's a move, going back to school, changing jobs, or if a child in the house is going to school or leaving the house for college, that can also impact our mood and how we're feeling, and also that in turn can impact, you know, what our eating habits are and if our weight is going up and down. So as a therapist, first of all, I would definitely take a personal inventory on how you're feeling, go through a checklist, see if there's anything that, you know, there's any red flags about that. And then as a fitness professional, I would look at, what does your day consist of? Are you exercising? I mean, do you have, I know you didn't mention it, if you already have some sort of fitness regimen that you are doing. If so, do you feel that sometimes you've peaked at it? Sometimes we do the same exercises for so many years, and the body gets used to it, and we don't kind of up it every once in a while. Maybe, you know, you need to up your weights a little bit, maybe add some cardio. So first, I would also make sure you go to your medical doctor, your primary care doctor first, to make sure there's nothing medically wrong. And also before any exercises or any, when I'm training someone or doing a class, I always make sure any clients or participants always get cleared by their medical doctors. And also take in mind if there's any injuries you have or if you're on any medications. So my first thing would say is add some more cardio if you don't already have in your day. I would try to do cardio 20 to 30 minutes a day, maybe once in the morning if you have time, and once, you know, towards the end of the day. We just want to make sure we don't do the cardio right before we go to sleep, because sometimes the body gets so energized, it's hard to go to bed right away. And I know it's hard sometimes to fit in an exercise schedule, but I'm wondering if your weight is going up and down so much every few months, let's see sometimes if we tweak one or two exercises or one or two habits, this can kind of keep it more in check. So start with the cardio. It could be walking. It could be jogging. If you don't belong to a gym, you can go up and down the stairs. You could also, if you do belong to the gym, there could be the treadmill, the elliptical machine, the bicycle, anything that's going to get your heart rate up. And I would like you to go maybe for about 20 to 30 minutes so you really feel your heart rate and also a little bit of sweat. What I like to do is do the cardio before I start doing my exercises. So maybe doing 20 minutes of cardio. And then let's start going into some basic exercises. And then I'm going to start more on a beginner, intermediate. And then if it's, you know, if you want to add weight or add repetitions, you can always do that on your own time. So let's first start with bicep curls. I would do about 3 sets of 15. Depending if this is one of your first exercises or if you're new to exercise, I would maybe start with 3 to 5 pounds for a woman. For a man, also, if there's no injuries or any problems, you can maybe want to start from 10 to 15 and also build on that. And you should start feeling by the 7th or 8th repetition. If you're not feeling a little bit of burn or a little bit, you know, that you're feeling, well, okay, this is working, that also might be a sign you want to up the weight a little bit. So starting with the bicep curls, we're going to keep our elbows close to our sides. Our palms are going to be facing towards the ceiling. We're going to have a light grip on the weight. We want to make sure we're not squeezing the weight really hard, because when we have our hands in that fist position and really tight, it really puts a lot of pressure on our heart. So we want to have loose hands, a loose grip, and we want to have the elbows into our side. What I mean is we don't want the elbows coming out. As I say, we don't want any chicken wings. So we don't want them moving around. We want to keep them stationary onto the side of the body. We're going to start lifting up the palms up towards the shoulders and down. We're not going to take it all the way up to the shoulders, but squeeze on the way up, and as you go down, resist on the way down, feeling it in the bicep, in the front of the arm. You really want to make sure that's what's moving the muscle, not your hands, and make sure also that your lower back and your upper body is not moving forward. You want your body to stay nice and straight, torso long, abs tight, knees slightly bent. The rest of the body should be still, and just the arms, squeezing the biceps up and down. So those would be bicep curls to the front of your body. I would do 3 sets of 15. And in between each set, I would take a minute break or a 30-second break, depending on how you're feeling. And also make sure you have a bottle of water close by and also a small towel. Then to finish up with some more of the bicep, let's take the arms, as the elbows are into the side, let's take it out to the side so the arms are out on an angle. And again, we're going to lift and lower. You can do both at the same time, or you can do alternating, one right side and then left side. This is not a race, so we don't want to speed through it and try and get them done as quick as possible. What I find a lot when I'm training someone or teaching classes, I really want them to be aware of the muscle that they're working and isolate that muscle, because sometimes we can get caught up in a class or caught up with what's going on and we just rush through it and we're not actually targeting the muscle that we want to be using. So again, to become very aware of what the muscle feels like when it's working, you want to start off really slow. So doing 3 sets of 15 of the bicep curls out on an angle. And then the third exercise for the biceps, which I would recommend, are called the hammer curls. This would be keeping your feet together, knees bent, back straight. We're going to take the heads of the weights up to the ceiling. So our palms are not going to be to our ceiling. We're going to be holding the weights to the side with the heads of the weight to the ceiling, alternating right side up towards the shoulder and then left. And again, keeping the elbows into the side. Make sure you're breathing. Also make sure that your lower back and your body isn't swaying back and forth. Again, I would do 3 sets of 15. And for this day, this will be the end of our biceps. Let's go on to triceps. What I would like to start off is with the overhead. Either standing, sitting on a chair, or sitting on an exercise ball, depending on your fitness level. Again, keeping a long torso, abs tight, shoulders relaxed, neck relaxed. Take one weight in both hands. Again, from 3, 5, 8, or 10, or for men you can go up a little bit higher, depending on your fitness level and, of course, what you're comfortable with, is you'll hold that weight between both hands and we'll take it over our head. We want to make sure our elbows are pointed forward and not out, again, like chicken wings, so we can really isolate our triceps. And also breathing. We're going to lift it up and lift it down. Again, make sure we're not locking out our elbows because that's not very healthy for the joints. We never want to lock out our elbows. We never want to lock out our knees. We always want to keep a slight bend. So I would do the overhead, up and down, working the triceps, 3 sets of 15. And again, by the 7th or 8th repetition, if you're not feeling a burn, maybe the next day or the next time you do these exercises, you might want to up the weight a little bit. Then let's go to the tricep kickback. We're going to put one weight in the right arm. We're going to take our elbow up like a hinge. And we're going to just bend the back of the arm from the elbow down, straight back and down. Again, not locking the elbow. And we want to make sure the elbow is up in the air. We don't want to be swinging the whole arm and swinging the body. We just want to be pushing it back and pushing it in. Again, take it back and in, inhaling and exhaling and keeping that elbow and that shoulder stabilized, working the tricep. And then the last one we can do is the tricep dip. This exercise can be done on a bench, on a chair, on a step. It's really great if you're in the office, anywhere that you're around, you can just use something that's stable enough. We're going to put our hands on it, hands facing towards our body behind us. Legs out a little bit on an angle, knees behind the toes, feet out more in front. This is, we want to focus on the upper body, so we want to make sure our lower body is not doing any of the workout. So elbows in again, no chicken wings. We're going to bend it down slowly and bend it up, never again locking out the elbows, and doing about 3 sets of 15. This one is a little bit harder because you are lifting a lot of your body weight just in your triceps, and you're also using your biceps, your shoulders, and most of your upper body. So you might not be able to do 3 sets of 15. If you want to start with 3 sets of 10, that is fine too. And again, be very wary that your neck and your shoulders are relaxed. We want to make sure that our shoulders aren't up to our ears and that we're all stiff. We always want to be relaxed, torso, long abs tight, and breathing. So that would be finishing our triceps. Now I would like to go down to our lower body because we've done biceps and triceps, and I like to switch back and forth so we don't overwork one part of the body, the upper or the lower, more than the other. I would start with lunges in place, alternating, or you can start with 25 on the right leg and 25 on the left leg. This would be about 3 sets of 25. What I would also recommend is making sure the leg that is back, you are pushing up through the heel on your way up, and when you're doing the stationary lunges, if you can have a mirror, I find is really great because a lot of times I see clients that the knee is going forward and back. So instead of doing an upward, downward motion with the lunge, it's a forward, backward, and that's really dangerous for our knees. It could really injure ourselves, so be very wary with the lunges that your knees aren't going forward past your toes. You always want your knee behind your toe. It's a straight down movement and not a forward back. So I would do 3 sets, 25 on the right, 25 on the left, relax, and then switch up. And then once you finish that, I would rest for a couple of minutes, make sure you are drinking some water because your heart rate will definitely be raised on this one. And then you can do some walking lunges. It could be across the room, it could be across the floor, across the fitness center, and just moving forward and back. It doesn't have to be any set distance, but just taking the lunges to more of a moving position. If you're not ready to go there, just stay with the single lunges and, you know, the stationary lunges. And then after that, I would like to add 25 jumping jacks. What I like to do this for is kind of a little bit more of interval training. It will add a little bit of cardio. So this might help that extra kick when you say your weight's going up every few months. This will kind of start burning more of the calories. So you could do 25 jumping jacks, rest a little bit, and then do it in second set. So I would do about 3 sets of 25 jumping jacks. Once you're done with that, make sure you rest for a little bit because we're going to go back to the floor. So you want to make sure you're not getting up, sitting down, standing up too quickly. You want to move slowly so you don't become dizzy and lose your balance at any time. So the last thing, we would go down to push-ups. This can be done either on your knees, a full plank push-up, or on the exercise ball, whatever you feel comfortable. Again, keeping the elbows bent, shoulders away from the ears, and pushing it up and down. This I would do about 3 sets of 10 or 3 sets of 12, depending on your fitness level. And what I do is I like to finish most of my exercise classes, my training sessions, with abs, because I find abs are something that a lot of people have difficulty with, but it's also an exercise we can do most of the time. What I mean is we don't want to be doing biceps 3-4 days in a row. We don't want to be doing shoulders 3-4 days in a row or doing these lunges. We don't, because if we overdo something, we're stretching out the muscle. It's like a rubber band. It doesn't snap back if you keep stretching it so much. So you want to make sure you take some days off in between. But abs you can do most days. But you also want to be careful that you don't have any lower back problems or neck or shoulders to also make sure that's okay, cleared by the doctor. I would start off with just regular ab workout, regular sit-ups. Again, lying on your back, lower back pushed down, pelvis tilted up, stomach tight, put the hands behind our head, eyes to the ceiling, and we're going to lift up the chest up to the ceiling without pulling on your neck. I see so many times people's necks bending forward and back and then pulling on the neck. This can be very dangerous. Your neck should be relaxed. Your neck should be nice and long. Your torso should be long. And you should be using this tightening, contracting the ab muscle. So that will be lifting you up. I would do regular abs, inhaling and exhaling, making sure you're breathing. We never want to be holding our breath. Just the upper abs, 3 sets of 25. Then I would go to the lower abs. What I would do with this is we put our legs up in the air, hands underneath the lower back, heels towards the ceiling, and we slowly lift our buttocks off our hand and push our heels up to our ceiling. Again, watch your lower back. If there are lower back problems, you probably don't want to do this exercise because it can really put a little bit of a strain on your lower back. And with any ab exercise, you also want to make sure your stomach is doing all the work and not your lower back, and also not rocking back and forth. So really be very aware of what muscle is doing this. Again, you're using your stomach. So lower abs, lifting it up and down, slowly and controlled. That I would do 3 sets of 25. And then I would finish the exercise with doing both abs. I would do lower and upper at the same time. So again, legs would be up in the air, but this time the hands would be behind the head, and you would lift up both ends at the same time, squeeze it, and resist. Squeeze, lift, and lower. But we don't want to always come totally loosen the muscle and the stomach muscle and let it just flop to the floor, the legs and the head. We want to slowly squeeze it up and then resist and slowly bring it down. So that I would do 3 sets of 25. And that, I think, for your beginning workout, intermediate workout, even advanced, depending on weights, you can always add repetitions and sets. I think it's something that could really help you with the gaining of the weight of 10 to 15 pounds every few months. So try this, and please keep me posted. Let me know how it goes. And each week, if you want, I can add another exercise to this program so then you can have a whole full body workout. Well, this will take us into our first song. It is Who Am I by the Casting Crowns.
Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever-wandering heart? Well, not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am flowers quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow.
Well, welcome back. That was Who Am I by The Casting Crown. Very uplifting and motivating song. Let's go into our second question. Dear Insight into Healing, I am often confused between the terms of borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder. Are there similarities? What makes them each their own distinct diagnosis? Well, that is a great question, and a lot of times clients, parents, family members often get confused about which one is which, and also sometimes both, is this a diagnosis, are they the same thing? But they do have some similarities, but they are two very distinct, different diagnoses. So let's start going with some definitions. I'm going to go to definitions of bipolar, the definition of borderline, and then going into some treatment options. I looked up an article called The Study Probes Distinctions Between Bipolar and Borderline Personality Disorders by Tracy Pedersen. It said an individual with bipolar disorder has cyclical changes in mood, energy, and activity levels that can be hypomania. A person with borderline personality disorder has trouble regulating emotions. There is reckless behavior and unstable relationships with others. And I found a lot of the time working with bipolar and also working with borderline personality disorders, that with borderline personality disorders, there's usually a history of unstable relationships, a lot of conflict in relationships. I'm not just talking about everyday, you know, relationship problems. There's a lot of extremes, very high highs and lows. I think sometimes that's what gets confused too with bipolar, between the manic episodes and the depressive episodes. So the second article I was reading is, what is the difference between borderline personality disorder and bipolar? So what this topic said is, borderline personality disorder and bipolar have two things in common: significant emotional instability and poor impulse control. For example, poor judgment, making rapid decisions, being impulsive, that often cause that person great harm, the inability to control one's emotions. But beyond these two things that they have in common, they are quite different. Bipolar disorder is genetically transmitted, biologically based mood disorder. It has two forms, bipolar 1. Those diagnosed have both major depressive episodes and episodes of mania. And then there is bipolar 2, which is major depression and episodes of hypomania. Manic episodes include the following symptoms: hyperactivity or agitation, racing thoughts, rapid, pressured speech, decreased need for sleep, psychotic symptoms such as delusions or hallucinations. It says psychosis occurs in 70% of manic episodes, very impaired impulse control, and poor judgment. There are two types of mania: euphoric mania, that is grandiosity, upbeat, euphoric, delusions, I am, example, the smartest person in the world, and dysphoric mania. That is when you see severe depression, marked irritability, suicidal ideas and impulses. Hypomania is a mild version of mania, where there is upbeat mood, decreased need for sleep, outgoing, but there's no psychotic symptoms. What I find a lot, too, is when I've worked with people with bipolar, they can be some patterns of being very upbeat, very manic. We see they can also go on a lot of shopping sprees. They can go for days without sleeping. And sometimes this is looked as, you know, this can be good, especially if they're going to school or if they have something they can do, that they can get these tasks done and be up for so many days and do it. But it's a long pattern of doing this, because then usually when there's a lot of mania, that also becomes more of that depression, where then they become very sad, they become very depressed, they isolate, they can become very irritable. And it says bipolar episodes can be ignited by major life stresses, sleep deprivation, and or substance abuse. They can also rise spontaneously and just come out of the blue, which I know can be very frightening. I know I often see sometimes young adults who are going away to college, and that can be something that sparks the bipolar episode. It could be, you know, the fear of leaving home, of starting something new. So I'd always say, you know, if something like this happens, or you have a child or a young adult, or this is happening to yourself and you're starting to have some doubts or some concerns, I would definitely go to your psychiatrist, go to your primary care doctor, and get an evaluation. You really want to be, you know, as if you listen to the show, I'm always safe. Be safe than be sorry. So always get an evaluation and see what's going on. Because sometimes when things come on like this, it can be very crippling. And it's very frightening. So I've seen a lot of young adults who, you know, they've pretty much led a pretty okay life, and things haven't had huge red flags, and then something like this happens in their late teens, young 20s, and all of a sudden it can take a really change that's going on in their personality and their lifestyle. So you really want to be aware of it, and you really want to go to your psychiatrist or your doctor and get a professional opinion. Now it says borderline personality disorders does not have spontaneous mood change. Rather, people suffering from this disorder are very sensitive, especially to interpersonal rejections or fears of abandonment. Periods of depression, extreme anxiety, and anger can be sparked by what to others may seem small stressors, as if someone doesn't return your phone call. But by borderline personality disorder does not have these classic manic symptoms, decreased need for sleep, extreme grandiosity, rapid thoughts, pressured speech. People with BPD, borderline, always have a history of very chaotic interpersonal relationships and intense emotional instability. So I think that's something you can always really look at, too, for the difference between borderline and bipolar. And this bipolar disorder can be successfully treated with psychiatric medications, mood stabilizers, and this is also, this treatment is often very challenging. It's tough because I think what I found a lot with working with clients that are bipolar, once they stabilize and they're on the medication, things are going so well, so they feel, hey, I don't need to take the medication anymore. I stabilize, and because the medication has given them the chance to kind of get that edge off, to kind of have, be able to focus or get, gain the awareness of what's going on, because when the bipolar episode hits, it can be so out of control. It can be so, you know, confusing, so you really don't have time to think straight, don't have the ability to, or the competency to concentrate, to focus. But when they start the medication and they're in a good therapy-based program, they start gaining control, they start getting awareness, and then they become very, gaining a lot of insight, okay, this is what happened. And a lot of times I've seen is they stop taking the medication. And then, you know, they might be okay for a while, and then the episode, the cycle of the episode, manic depressive, hit, and they either go into a very high manic mode or into a very depression slump, and it can be dangerous because sometimes they'll isolate and you might not hear from them for a while, and they'll fall off the face of the earth, or they become so mad that they're not sleeping for days, they're not eating, they're running around. Sometimes there's also very risky sexual behavior. I have a lot of clients that have a lot of financial debt. They will go out and spend thousands of dollars shopping or do online spending and credit cards, and then after a couple of days they're like, why did I do this? I'm not sure. So I think also be very careful not to judge when these things are going on. I know it's hard, you know, medication is something not everybody wants to be on, but I say if you have cancer or if you have diabetes, same thing, you sometimes you need to take medication in order to stabilize what's going on. And I find with bipolar, in a lot of cases, the medication helps stabilize. And it doesn't mean that you have to be on such a high dosage. I mean, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I really don't get into medication. But if your psychiatrist is recommending it, I would try it until, you know, you really get a really insight and awareness of what's going on. People with borderline disorder are sometimes treated with the antidepressants that target the irritability and impulsivity. However, the outcome of such treatment is usually marginal. The treatment for borderline is psychotherapy. There's also a thing called DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, that I can also go into in a little bit after I go on, and I will discuss a little bit more about that so you have an idea of what that type of treatment is. Bipolar is an episodic mood disorder. When a person is not a mood swing, such as mania or depression, the symptoms aren't present. Borderline is a pervasive illness that is considered part of the person's personality and is not episodic. So that makes it very interesting. I really like that bipolar is episodic mood disorder. So it's a mood swing, either mania or depression. And when they're not in that, you don't see their symptoms. But borderline is an illness, a pervasive illness. So that's part of the person's personality. It's not something that they swing in and out of. People with borderline personality disorder often feel misunderstood, alone, empty, and hopeless. They're typically full of self-hate, self-loathing. They may be fully aware that their behavior is destructive, but they feel unable to change it. So a lot of times, and I've worked with also with a lot of borderline personalities, they're aware of this destructive behavior. It's just so hard to stop when they get, when these type of, these triggers, that maybe someone didn't call them back right away, someone wasn't paying attention to them, maybe they feel that someone made a comment to them, and it really kind of sets them into this spiral. Poor impulse control may lead to problems with gambling, driving, or even the law. They find that many areas of their lives are affected, including social relationships, work, and they calculate that they can also be like turned on and turned off. What I find is, you know, sometimes with borderline personalities is why they say a lot of times with borderline, there's a high suicide rate or there's suicide ideations. And what becomes very frightening is even they do suicidal gestures or suicidal attempts. And or even it can start off just as an ideation. But as they go on and on and on, they realize, hey, this is how I get attention. So maybe just saying, I'm going to hurt myself isn't enough this time. So now maybe saying, I have a bottle of pills, and then maybe that's not good. Maybe if I just cut my arm. And I think the ante keeps getting up and up and up. That's why sometimes suicide rates are so high in borderline personalities, even if they weren't, you know, really had the intent of killing themselves. As I said before, you keep doing the same behavior over and over again. One of these times it's gonna happen, something dangerous. It's, you know, it's an accident waiting to happen, it's a disaster waiting to happen. So if they keep doing these suicidal attempts, suicide gestures, there is a danger that one of these times it's going to follow through. So you really want to be careful. And as I said before, any of the listeners have heard my show on suicide, always be safe than sorry. Always, you know, do that risk assessment. If someone really has an ideation, if they have a plan, especially if they have past attempts, call the crisis team, call 911, take them to the emergency room. This is not something they'll just kind of snap out of. So you really want to be very aware of this. And I know no one wants to get, you know, to be hospitalized or anything, but I think it's always make sure there's a psychiatric evaluation. This is something that, you know, we can on our own. You know, professionals can help handle this, but as a family member, it's too much for one person to carry. You definitely want to bring in your team of professionals. Bipolar is treated with medication and a strong management plan. The treatment outcome for borderline is complicated as the drugs on the market only address only some of the symptoms, such as depression and anxiety. So as I was saying before, for borderline, there is dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT. And many of the people with borderline have great success with DBT. And there's many books on it. A lot of therapists are specialized in it. They have a lot of hospitals that have programs. DBT programs, day programs, which really I've seen a lot of my clients going to, is just, I mean, really you get really great, great results. DBT was developed by Marcia Linehan at the University of Washington. It started as a comprehensive cognitive behavioral treatment that was originally developed to treat chronically suicidal individuals suffering from borderline personality disorder. DBT has been found especially effective for those with suicidal and other multiply occurring severely dysfunctional behaviors. It says research has shown DBT to be effective in reducing suicidal behavior, psychiatric hospitalization, treatment dropout, substance abuse, anger, and interpersonal difficulties. This came from What is DBT? DBT from Behavioral Tech, LLC. Also, clients receiving CBT found that the focus on change was a little invalidating, so DBT also brought in the focus of acceptance and validation, so this helped a lot of clients to really stay with it. It's also, you know, they need those validation strategies were added, and also it was also to help clients highlight when their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors were perfectly normal, and then helping clients discover that they had sound judgment and that they were capable of learning how and when to trust themselves. And I think that's, you know, a very important thing. It's sometimes, when as a client, especially if you're suffering something like this, it's very important because you feel that sometimes you're out of control. And what happens, it makes you question your judgment. It makes you question who you are and can I do this, which is a very, very frightening, crippling place. So by doing the CBT kind of behavioral therapy and then adding the acceptance component and the validation, it helps them give them a kind of a structured idea of what's going on and what must change in their life if they want to build a better life. But also the acceptance helps them to really accept who they are and kind of take that judging component out of it and really move forward. And it said dialectical strategies gave the therapist a means to balance acceptance and change in the session and served to prevent both therapist and client from being stuck in rigid thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that can occur when enormous, you know, emotions run high, and often with clients that have borderline personality. The emotions are very strong. The emotions are very high. So this DBT program really helps you do different things. It really helps you control and get a better awareness of what's going on. And there's different stages and targets in DBT. DBT is a treatment that week after week addresses the crisis for the moment. It has a logical progression that first addresses behaviors that could lead to the client's death, and then behaviors that could lead to premature termination, to behaviors that destroy the quality of life, and then also the need for alternative coping skills. I mean, first of all, most of DBT, what they want is make sure that the client wants to stay alive and that it's staying in therapy. And then the third goal is building a better quality of life. So again, I got this, what is DBT from behavioral tech? So if you're interested in it or if you want to learn more about it, please check it out. I looked it up right on the web. Or you can send any questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Insight into Healing, and you can private message me. Again, all names will be anonymous. I'll keep for, you know, confidentiality, so your name will never be put out there unless you want it. So please send any questions or comments or thoughts or maybe some new topics, or if you want me to go into something in more depth, we can definitely do that. Well, let's go into our second song. It's Mandisa. And the name of the song is Stronger.
Hey, heard you were up all night, thinking about how your world ain't right, and you wonder if things will ever get better. And you're asking, why is it always raining on you, when all you want is just a little good news, instead of sitting there stuck out in the weather. Thank you.
and that was Mandisa, and the name of that song was Stronger. Let's go into our next question. Dear Insight into Healing, I am about to graduate college with my Bachelor's of Science degree. I am not sure what direction to go in. I feel stuck. Is there something wrong with me that I don't know what I want to do at my age? Well, first of all, no, it's not anything wrong with you at this point that you're not sure exactly where you want to go. And I think that's what happens so many times when people are graduating college, graduating high school, or looking for a job. They don't know exactly sometimes what direction they want to go in, and they become discouraged. And what I like to do with my clients is say, look at it more of an opportunity to kind of check out different things that you might be interested in, you know, trying to look at the positive aspect of it. So even though you're not sure exactly which way you want to go in, at least by trying different things, you can find out what you don't want to go, what direction you don't want to go in, but you also might find something new. So you're kind of open to many different things. And the Bachelor of Science degree has a lot of career opportunities. In fact, it offers a huge range of majors, including engineering, health sciences, business, technology. You have so many different options that you can use once you graduate with your Bachelor of Science. There's also what I've got for career opportunities with a Bachelor of Science degree. There's applied physics, architecture, biochemistry, chemistry, civil engineering, community health, computer engineering, computer service, computer science, construction management, electrical engineering, geology. There's also healthcare administration, mathematics, nuclear medicine, nursing, nutrition, public health, and sports medicine. So I'm not sure if you really have looked into this before, but I mean, there's a lot of options. And yes, you know, one of these options might sound something that, you know, that this could be something that you're interested in. So I would say, actually, you know, no, there's nothing wrong. And I can see that you're feeling stuck because there's so many different things out there. But I think by really, you know, breaking down this list of different career opportunities and saying, you know, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are you really interested in? I mean, do you have a goal? What have you seen yourself doing? And you're not, I know you said you're not sure which direction you want to go in. I think also looking, do you want to work in an office? Do you want to work in the field? Do you want to work a lot with people? Or do you want to do a lot more work on your own? Do you want to work in technology? So, I mean, I think it's really a wide range of different career opportunities. So I would look at it's not feeling stuck and not knowing what's going on. It's saying, okay, I have so much options. I have so many things to look at and really figure this out. It said, you know, a Bachelor of Science degree is really a career booster. It says science-related careers are growing in number due to technological advances and competitive changes in many of today's industries, such as healthcare, engineering, computer science, information technology. I mean, all these type of opportunities, they're needed in our workforce. They're not going to go away. So it's very important to say, you know, things are really out there. It's really getting your confidence up. It's getting your motivation and saying, you know, let me go out there and see what is out there for me. Let's see what type of work would you be interested in. And I think also saying, you know, when you're feeling stuck, is this the only area of your life that you're feeling stuck in? And what do you mean when you're feeling stuck? What does being stuck feel to you? Because I find sometimes, you know, when you're at this age and you're graduating college, it's a lot different. Because when you're in high school, when you're in college, you kind of have this force behind you. You have the school, you have teachers, you have guidance counselors, and it can be a very kind of frightening thing to go now out into this world, and you don't have the school behind you, and of course, you know, different friends, and it's really, you know, at this point where they keep saying this is how you define the rest of your life. And I think it's looking at it and saying, I know that's a big statement, and it's a tough thing to say, wow, this is, am I defining the rest of my life? But looking at it and saying, you know, this is, I'm at a crossroads. Like, this is where I take the opportunity and say, what do I want to do? This is my choice. This is my decision. And really looking into things that, you know, what makes you happy? And I think a lot of times people will go into fields that, they think will make them happy. I mean, when you're making your decision, is it your decision? Is it your parents' decision? Are you doing what your friends think of you or what your teachers say recommend that would be best for you? I think taking all of those into consideration, but also to be able to say, okay, what are you good at? And being realistic, what are your strengths? You know, what are your barriers? Are these things that you can work on? Are these things you can improve on? Some people are just, you know, have the personality of they like to work alone. They don't like to work in a big office. They don't like to stay in the same place from 9 to 5. So that could be a different type of job. Some people like to be around people, and they like the office experience. They want to be at the desk from 9 to 5, and at 5 o'clock, boom, that's it. They don't want to have any more work to do after that. So I think that's really an important thing, too, is really exploring that. And these answers are not going to come to you overnight. It's not going to be like, okay, boom, this is what I want to do. Now I know. It's going to be trial and error. I think it's sometimes finding, you know, what do you like? Like when I graduated with my master's of social work, I had an idea of what population of clients that I wanted to work with, that I wanted to, you know, different areas. And then I found through internships, through different jobs I was taking, that, wow, I really have a strength in different areas. And I think that's what's always keeping your options open. You never know, and being open to that. I mean, I've been, you know, as some of you know, I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm also an actress and a personal trainer and a ropes instructor. And so, you know, someone came to me, Sherry Emily, about doing my own radio show, and I said, wow, I've never done a radio show before. I don't know anything about it. But I said, you know, why not take the opportunity? And now I'm going on after a few months, and things are going really well. But I mean, if you would have asked me a year ago that I'd be having my own radio show, I would have been like, no, I don't see myself doing that. So I think that's what's really important, is letting things happen. You never know what's going to happen, so don't block yourself. Don't sabotage yourself. Let these things come out. And you know, you can be very pleasantly surprised. And you know, I think what happens too through life, through trial and error, you know things that you're really good at. And you know things that are like, you know what, this is really just not something that I feel strong about, or this is not something I enjoy doing. Let me see what's going on. And I know a lot of people say, hey, you know, you need to work. There's money, there's bills. You can't be too picky. Yes, I understand that too. But you want to make sure when you're making decisions about your work, about your career, that you're really looking at the full picture and looking at long run. Is this something you can see yourself doing? Is this something you see yourself enjoying? Because you do want to have some fulfillment in your life. You want to be able to enjoy what you're doing. And it's really saying, what are you looking for? And I think being very, very open and honest and not judging yourself and not putting an exact timeline on something that this is what has to be. This is what I have to have this job. Yes, it's good to have goals. It's good to have structure and an outline, a guideline of how, you know, the different steps where you see in your life where you want it to go. But you want to make sure you're not limiting yourself. So I hope I answered your question. Please don't feel stuck. And there's nothing wrong with you not knowing exactly what you want to do with your at this age. It's actually completely normal. So this brings us to our end of our show. So I'd like to finish up with our journaling exercise. Take 10 minutes a day to enhance your mental status, your emotional status, and your physical status. What I mean by this is pick something each day, 10 minutes. It'd be 10 minutes for your mental status. Is it working on grounding exercises? Is it meditation? Is it breathing exercises? Is it doing positive self-affirmations, something to enhance your mental status, and then your emotional status. Take 10 minutes a day to kind of take a personal inventory of where you are emotionally, to have an awareness. Are your moods going up and down? Do you find in the morning you're a little bit happier? Do you find by the end of the day you feel a lot less motivated? And really becoming very aware of your patterns and of your emotions and different you know, moods that you have. And then the last one, your physical status. And I think this is what we kind of started the beginning of the show with, is your fitness, is your physical status, is your health. This is so important. And what one of my goals for was for my show, this radio show, is to incorporate a mental, emotional, and physical well-being. Having that place where you're able to incorporate all three, because I find these three are so integral to having a healthy life. You can't have one without the other. And I know through my life, so many people said, you got to pick. You either got to be a therapist, you either have to be an actress, or you either have to be a personal trainer. You can't do all three. And I always said, no, they are so connected to each other that I find to be whole, you really need to incorporate all three. So I hope I've really helped with a lot of these questions and provided you with a lot of educational tools, coping skills, and also some fitness goals and fitness exercises that can help enhance you mentally, emotionally, and physically. So again, if you have any questions or any recommendations for any topics for on upcoming shows, or also if you also want me to go into something more depth of any of the topics that I have covered, please send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com, or you can always check us out on Facebook on Insight Into Healing and private message me and let me know what how you're feeling and if there's anything you'd like for me to go over. So the song that took us in the beginning of the show was Every Good Thing by The Afters, and that is going to be the show, the song that takes us out at the end of the show. So everyone, once again, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for all your support. I really, really do appreciate it. It's just so humbling. And have a good night, and God bless.